Second, and we can't.
You sure it's going?
Rolling.
It's good.
And this is good. Okay, great. You're great. Today is Sunday, December 30th, 2012. Hard for me to say 2012. When I think of 12, I think of 1912. But okay, 2012. What can we say? I want to say, first of all, good evening to all the Talmidim sitting in front of me, and above all, to the many, many more Talmidim across the vast expanse of the greater earth. I just want to comment and end it off because everyone is asking me, and the pressure on me, look, what happened with YU, what's come out in the open, I stand on what I've said. It's part of the mentality going across the Torah world today that we no longer sweep anything under the carpet. And all of you are aware of what happened in Williamsburg. All of you probably know. We even have a student from England in the Kollel. All of you know what's happened in London. I know about Melbourne as well. I know the players. I know the institution. So people spoke up about YU. What can YU do? I've consulted with lawyers. It's 30, 40 years ago what we're talking about. And there's not much that can be done now. It's past the statute of limitations. More than anything, precautionary steps have to be taken that nothing like this can ever happen again in the future. If it happened, even that none of us can say for sure. Although I have to say it's very frightening when tens of students have come forth, whatever the total number is, you're heading towards 2 minyanim, I gather, and it's very frightening. But from what I gather, YU conducted consulted with a law firm, hired them, experts in this area, and they're looking into the past, but what's most important is the future. And I understand that YU has announced names, offices, a student should turn to immediately. What I want to read to you is a statement by Reb Meisher Soloveitchik of Chicago, Illinois. Reb Meisher Soloveitchik, the eldest son of Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, a man who has a lifetime of commitment to Torah and Yirat Shemayim and doing wonderful, wonderful things. And this is a statement that he made a while ago, but it's very relevant. It's November 26, 2012. Why I'm not, and he was consulted regarding a case in I believe it is New Square. While I am not familiar with the details of this particular case in New Square, being a resident of Chicago myself, a few basic principles need to be emphasized. Child molesters should be reported to the police and brought to justice primarily as a preventive and protective measure. To grasp the enormity of the obligation incumbent on us to root out child molestation, we need to focus on its horrific effects on children. Perhaps one of the most devastating effects of child molestation is the repetition of the cycle of abuse. In some cases, victims who do not receive the help they need in turn may eventually victimize others in a similar manner. This results in a child molestation crisis of epidemic proportions as we have today. And I can only say Baruch Shekivanti Ledat Gedolim, because for many years already I've stated you immediately have to call the police. The police have experts, and I hope that at least for the future, putting this into place with a name to turn to, names to turn to, we will never again hear such accusations about Yeshiva University, which is very dear to all of us. Okay, with that being said, let's roll. I raised a very fascinating issue last week on paskening, and we can be the greatest Talmidei Chachamim of our generation, but when you look at previous generations, who are we, what are we, and I'm not the only one raising this issue. I don't know if I'll reach it. I hope to reach it today, I'll show you Baruch Shekivanti Ledat Gedolim. And I quoted to you quite a number of sources last time we met, before Sarah B'Tevat, that Yiftach Vadora Kashmul Ledora Ein Ledayan Elamashainav Rawat, and we are alive today, we are teaching Torah, we are recognized, we are Rabbanim. Some of us are going to be big Lamdanim, and if we have the ability, we have to paskin. I told the story about Reb Chaim Zimmerman, and I have to tell you something very fascinating, that Friday night, walking back from the Kotel, so one of my Talmidim said to me, oh, I heard a fabulous story on the website this week. And he starts to tell me the story about Reb Chaim Zimmerman. I say, I'm the guy who told the story. But I want to tell you, that's not an anecdote. That story I heard with these two ears from Rabbi Dr. Norman Frimmer. And of course, when you hear a story like that, you're overwhelmed. And I can just repeat the story for those that didn't hear it. It'll take 1 minute. But the story is very simple, that we spoke about Reb Chaim Zimmerman. By the way, I've ordered a volume for the Kollel, for the library, that has a biography of Reb Chaim Zimmerman. So when we get it, I'll let you know. And for the first time, you can read a little bit about his very fascinating life. I hope it's a biography on a level. It's a mini biography within a bigger volume. I hope it has some of his Chidushei Torah as well. But Reb Chaim Zimmerman was one individual that was heads and shoulders above the crowd. And here he is in Chicago, and he has devoted Talmidim. He's teaching at Skokie. It was a fruitful period in Reb Chaim Zimmerman's life. And one of his Talmidim is Norman Frimmer, who goes on to become very well-known, Rabbi Dr. Norman Frimmer, Zichrono Levracha, the father of the Frimmer brothers. You may know one or two of them. There are three brothers actually living in Israel. I believe there were three brothers. I don't know what else was in the family. And what I can tell you is he meets Normie Frimmer about 10 a.m. in the morning, and he says to Norman during the 9 days, Normie, I got to have a corned beef sandwich. And Normie said, looks at him, Rebbe, it's the 9 days. And Reb Chaim Zimmerman says, meet me in the deli, 8 o'clock tonight. Well, Norman Frimmer shows up in the deli 8 o'clock at night, and Reb Chaim walks in holding a Baba Batra, makes a siyum, and they have their corned beef sandwiches. So Larry, the question he asks is Rebbe, when did you start Baba Batra? And the Rebbe tells him, oh, about 10:30 this morning. So I don't have to tell you when you live, start, for me it's not an anecdote, I lived it. So who am I to paskin? But nevertheless, I'm not certain, I don't want to say it too loud, but I'm not certain I couldn't, you know, Reb Chaim was Reb Chaim when it came to Pesach. We are alive and kicking, and we have to accept the responsibility. Now, at the end of the class, I showed you a rush. It's a fascinating sugya. I actually was mekayim a mitzvah of Hashavat Aveda this week, a very simple story. I daven in the shtiblach mincha marv occasionally, and I find the siddur in the shtiblach, a little shokin siddur, with a name and a cellular phone number in it. So I look at the siddur one night, I look at it the next night, and I say, you know, this is not the property of the shtiblach. This is someone who left it here. So I called the number, and he was so happy, he picked it up here at Gris. So I was mekayim Hashavat Aveda, but the Gemara I was quoting to you, the Sugya I was quoting at the end of the last year in Bava Metzia, you understand if you find, for the sake of argument, someone left a pack of 10 Hershey bars. So if you're going to keep it till he shows up, it turns stale. So now maybe you should just eat it and you'll pay him the money, or sell it and you'll pay him the money, or no, he wants the Hershey bars. And that was the Sugya, and it's a homach like it. But the Rush says, halacha kabat ra'i, that the halacha is always like the last generation. Okay? This adds to what we said last week, that yiftach b'doro k'shmul b'doro, ein l'dayin el'ma she'inat b'roat. we're alive today. You can't go. Remember the story I told you. And if you think it's my innovative mind, I'm going to give you a source for the story later. But imagine if a girl comes to you and says, Rebbe, I'm not going to ask you my shilas. I'm going to Rebbe Akiva's grave in Posen. His grave, by the way, I'm told, still is intact, despite the Hitler period. And she's going to stand at the grave and ask him, should I observe one day Yontif or 2 days Yontif in Israel? If it's one day, knock once. If it's 2 days, knock twice. I mean, you can't live like that. Aaron Rakefit is 1/1 billionth. Of 1/1 trillionth, let's talk American language today, 1/1 trillionth of Rebbe Akiva, but I'm alive now, Rebbe Akiva is not. Now, this concept, and let me go further now, this concept of halacha kabatra'i is not only, for the sake of argument, you have a machlekes rishonim. So you come along and like the Mishnah Brura, and we'll come back to the Mishnah Brura. You're going to hear a Meir Dekvot from me down the line, quoting the Rav on the Mishnah Brura. But those of you familiar with the Mishnah Brura, and I don't have to tell you, the Mishnah Brura with Zeich, I would say, Hiskim Aleim Kol Yisrael, that we take the Mishnah Brura very seriously. I would say we take it more seriously than the Aruch HaShulchan, although anyone involved in learning will tell you the Aruch HaShulchan is a posek, and the Mishnah Brura is a malakhed, and that is true. And Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin said it, and the Rav intimated it. But the Mishnah Brura is the Mishnah Brura. The Chafetz Chaim, his saintly character. He was a, what's the word I would use? He was a folk hero, a folk tzaddik. The Mishnah Brura, I had Rebbeim who boasted to me that they were at the Mishnah Brura's funeral. They had just come to Mir. They were youngsters at the time. And the funeral, they went to Ladin for the funeral. And this is what they're boasting about, that they were at the Mishnah Brura's funeral. So you can imagine who the Mishnah Brura was. You're dealing with Chizkim Aleim Kol Yisrael. So the Mishnah Brura adds up Achronim. He's closing the door. The Mishnah Brura that he robbed the chair is okay, but he should at least close the door. That the Mishnah Brura adds up Achronim. So imagine you have many Rishonim who hold one Shita, and the Mishnah Brura comes along and he finds an Achron that holds differently. I'll give you a source in a moment. We paskin like the Achron, even if he is one against a majority of Rishonim. So much do we put stress on halacha kabatra'i, that even one against many. And here, I'll introduce you to a fascinating sefer, and I'll tell you a little story how I happen to own the sefer. Yad Malachi, do you recognize by Rav Malachi HaKohen? Anyone recognize the name Yad Malachi? Anyone use it today? I'll tell you, you're so computerized today that certain svarim that we used today already have fallen into neglect. The Yad Malachi was a collection of klalim on poskim, a fabulous collection. It's about 300 years old, I would say. It was by a Sfadik scholar. He signs his name Malachi HaKohen Sit. So you know what that stands for. Svadi Tahar. I believe that the Tzvi Hirsch Ashkenazi also used to sign his name like that. And I don't know what he considered himself, but there are great Ashkenazim who evidently have a wish that they could be Svadim Tahorim. I remember once I went to have to do a blood test at the Kupat Cholim. Say, no, in Yerushalayim, it's Yerushalayim. The guy at the Kupat Cholim is a Svadi guy, a Frum guy. And we start talking, and while he's taking my blood, he's telling me how he learned in Chevron, but he was always a Svadi, and they looked at him as if he was a second-class citizen. That's why he became a blood technician. So I looked at him, a second-class citizen, a Svadi, the Rambam, the Ramban, the Rashba, do it. Bah, Rabbi Yaakov Bal Haturim already was two-thirds Sfadi. The Rush already was one half, right? He shifted gears in life. So he signs Sfadi Taha. Now, the Yad Malachi is a fabulous sefer. You can get all the klalim on the Rambam and all the klalim on the Shulchan Aruch. And he goes back and he deals with all the klalim on the Gemara. And if you look in on page Chafhei Amir Aleph, subdivision Kuf Samach Tet, he has an entire paragraph with endless sources. Halacha Kabatrayi Amrinan, Afilu biyachid keneged rabim, that even if it's one, that against the many, and he brings endless examples where you take a later authority and you like his thinking, you like his reasoning, you can pass him like him, even if he's going against the many. Now, how do I come to own Yad Malachi? It's a rare book. I don't know if it's available. I don't know if it's been available for years already. But in graduate school, I had a wonderful professor, Professor Yoshua Finkel, Zichrono Livracha. He was a great expert in Aramaic and texts, a very unique individual, an expert in Targum. And every half year, he would give away books to his students, and he would write in it. He wrote and it given to Aaron Rotkoff and signed it. And he said, one day you'll remember me when I'm no longer here. And I have to tell you, whenever I open the Yad Malachi, I think of Professor Finkel. Now, what do we mean by all this? And now I want to come to the heart of today's share. I mean, what does this mean? Halacha kabat ra'i, one against many. People in our generation, I mean, when all is said and done, Gedolei Yisrael will Mesayim Shas once a month. I can tell you the Rav didn't do that. Rabbi Aaron Cutler couldn't do that. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky couldn't do that. I mean, we're talking earlier generations, the level they were on. You talk about the Ragat Shavagon, Rabbi Yosef Rosen. So I tell the story in the Suvir. I mean, I heard the story so many times, I feel I actually lived it. But when Reb Lezer Silva went back to visit his Rebbeim, so he went in to see Reb Meir Simcha in Davinsk. Reb Meir Simcha, the Har Sameach we're talking about. So the Har Sameach told him, "Min dafechet arayngein tzizem de Ragat Sheva." You have to also go in to see the Ragat Sheva. Why did Davinsk have two Rabbanim? Because Reb Meir Simcha was the Rav of the Litvish community, the Mitnagdim. And the Ragat Sheva was the Rav of the Hasidic community. So he goes into the Ragat Sheva and he comes out. The Reb Meir Simcha says, "Nu was für ein Eindruck hat er gemacht? What impression did he leave you with?" And Reb Lezer Silva says, "What a memory!" And the Osameach barks at him, "What are you talking about, a memory?" He says, "He has no memory whatsoever." He says, "If I recall something, that's a memory." He says, "By the Ragat Sheva, kol haTorah kula munachat lefanov kekupsa. It's like in a box in front of him, everything he knows." So you see, you think of people like that. Who are we? How can we paskin? Okay, now let me give you a fabulous source, and then I'll show you that everything I've said, I'm saying it in the name of Rakefid, and in a few minutes I'm going to switch gears and say it in the name of Reb Moshe Feinstein. Okay, look into one of the most famous simanim in the Choshen Mishpatah, simon that's going to preoccupy us for many, many weeks. Look in Choshen Mishpat Chaf Hei, Sifkat, Siman Chaf Hei, Sifkatan Bet. And look into the Ramah. I just want to read the Ramah to you. And don't ask me any questions on the first part of the Ramah, because I'll ask all the questions, but not yet. But I want you to hear the Ramah, how he paskins this concept la halacha. Kol makom shedivrei harishonim ktuvim al haseifa, v'heim mefursamim, V'haposkim hachronim chokim aleichem, kimo shelefamim haposkim chokim alegonim, chokim acha haachronim. Da halacha kebatra'i me abaye rabba v'eilech. So what did the Rama just say? That wherever something is written on a sefer, something we know. What is something we know? The way we learn today, the Rambam and the Nosei Kelim, the Shulchan Aruch, the Nosei Kelim. You fellas go to the Bar Ilan computer, where you have all the diskette, where you have all many of the Shelet and Shuvet. So we have it, we know it. And nevertheless, Achronim can differ with Rishonim. And we find that Achronim differ with Gaonim. And there are many examples that you can give, endless examples, where we don't live like the Gaonim. And with all due respect to the Ragat Sheva, you're not going to mention the Ragat Sheva in the same breath with Rav Haigon, Rav Sajigon, the Shiltot. I mean, these are Gaonim. This is almost an Amora. And nevertheless, Halacha Kibat Ra'i, from the time of Abaye v'Rava and on. And we'll come back, why Abaye and Rava, but this is the way the Rama paskins. Now, Chavchei Sifkatan Bet in the Rama. It's not in the Shulchan Aruch per se, it's in the Rama, it's in the Hagot HaRama. Generally speaking, everyone would quote it, the Shulchan Aruch, but here it's the Rama. You follow me? I want to be medayek, it's the Rama. Now, why is this? And someone who listens to the Shurim and can't come Sunday, but comes on Monday, asked me, why, what do you mean? A kid today is going to paskin around. We're not talking about kids. We're talking about Lamdanim. We're talking about Tamidei Chachamim. But nevertheless, why is this? So you have the Pitkei Tshuva. Now, what is the Pitkei Tshuva? Let me just explain for one moment, a little bit background. We have a tremendous problem. Nitma'atu hadorot. The generations go down. We all spoke about the Ragat Sheva. I spoke a few minutes ago about Reb Chaim Zimmerman. We don't have people like this in our generation. Generations go down. Yiftach b'doro k'shmul b'doro. All right? Generations go down. How do we get the sources? So you think that Bar Ilan began the whole concept of responsa literature? You have already, on the Orach Chaim, you have the famous Sharei Tshuva of Reb Chaim Mordechai Margolis. This was of Dubna, Poland, one of the Margolis brothers, and Adam Gadol. He did in the Sharei Tshuva. You have an index to all the main Tshuvot that were written on Orach Chaim until his time. When we say until his time, you're talking of the middle of the 19th century. And all of you know that when you learn Orach Chaim, you look into the Sharei Tshuva and you come up with many sources, and many Achronim quote the Sharei Tshuva. They do not even have the access to the original Svarim. Now, with the Bar Ilan computer, we have a miracle, because between Bar Ilan and between Hebrew books and what my students have taught me on computerization, it is unbelievable what is available. But this was the Sharei Tshuva. So now you have the Sharei Tshuva. Ah, what about Eben Ezra? What about Chasam Mishpat? What about Yoredeya? So another Polish Rav did the Pitkei Tshuva, and he followed the example of the Sharei Tshuva, and that was Reb Avraham Tzvi Hirsch Eisenstadt. And he gave us the Sharei Tshuva. So if you look into the... He gave us the Pitkei Tshuva, excuse me. He completed, he supplemented what the Sharei Tshuva began on Orach Chaim. In other words, take a look at the Mishnah Brura. The Mishnah Brura is on Orach Chaim. No one has filled the Mishnah Brura in on Yoredeya, on Ebenezer, on Choshen Mishpat. The Mishnah Brura did Orach Chaim because Orach Chaim is practical. Every Jew needs Orach Chaim in his daily life. But we'll never have anyone on the Mishnah Brura's level who can fill in Yoredeya. You guys desperately need a Mishnah Brura on Yoredeya. Any Rav who has the Paskin Shailas, the most difficult Shailas you're going to get in the Rabbinate, are not basically in Yoredeya. They're in Eben Ha'ezer. You follow? In the state of Israel, Choshen Mishpat has once again come to life. In New York, too, I would say they are, but they didn't. I don't say they all have a sterling reputation. The RCA, based in, occasionally deals with Choshen Mishpat. They have, as far as I can tell, people tell me they have the best reputation of any based in the United States. There are other Batei Dinim in Williamsburg and Muncie. I don't know the level. There I don't want to state anything, but I always refer people that have a dispute. I said, that's what you have in RCA based in. And it's not people think it's only on Gittin. Yes, Gittin and Ebenezer Shilas take away a lot of their time. But they've had some very big questions in Choshen Mishpat, where people have. I know when there was a case in Beverly Hills where there was a big machlokes between some very wealthy Orthodox Jews, and a number of millions, and $5-7 million were involved. And these were people that, to them, $5 or $7 million is not the end of the world, and they went to Beis Din. And they made a deal before the Beis Din that whoever wins, the money goes to Tzedakah. It's an amazing story. And one guy won, and the day school, as you'll see his name, is appendix to the big day school right next to Beth Jacob Synagogue. You'll see a Sephardic Persian name. He's the one who runned it in Torah, and X millions went to the day school. So the Pitkei Tshuva is invaluable. The Sharei Tshuva is invaluable. And with all due respects to the Bar Ilan computer, when you're learning with an open Shulchan Aruch in front of you, you're going to look at the Pitkei Tshuva before you look for something esoteric on the computer. At least my generation will say that. Could be your children already will be beyond us. Now, look into the Pitkei Tshuva and what does this mean? He's very troubled. Halacha kabatra'i. The halacha is like a dummy, like rakefet. And he's arguing with Rishonim. How can this be? What does it mean? It's not logical. But he's beautiful. He says, and he quotes Svarim, but the gist of it is, what does it mean, halacha kabatra'i? When you analyze all the earlier sources, when you explain your opinion, when you bring proofs to what you're saying, then halacha kabatra'i. In other words, you have to be able to defend yourself. It's not like I said, 2 weeks ago, it's not like a kid opening up a kitzur shulchan aruch and paskining a shaila. You have to know what you're doing. And there I add in a personal addendum that Kanayin Hara, you know, I'm married, you know, in this generation, when someone stays married to his wife and they don't trade each other in, you got to give a yashikayach. I don't know, among Goyim it's even more pronounced. When I travel and we go together, and I always say we've been together more than 50 years, they look at you with awe. So my wife always says to me, when we first got married, it's funny, you were always a machmir. And as the years moved on, suddenly more kulat appeared when I would ask you a question. And the answer is very simple. When we first got married, how much did I know? Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, maybe a little bit more. As the years moved on and you know how to learn and you develop technique and you understand what psak is about, So, then already, halacha kabatrayi, but you got to be able to explain yourself. You have to be able to make a case. And I write about in Washington with the heter aguna, with that woman who needed chalitza in Russia when the communists ruled, and how she's going to get in. And I came up with this whole concept right in the kollel. I was looking at a Talmud of mine named Bini Blau, Harav Binyamin Blau, who's in Cleveland today. And as I'm looking at him, and I'm lecturing on Sveik-Sveiker, and I'm going, and it dawns upon me, hey, wait a minute, I have a solution. No, I go into Rav Ovadia, I have to be able to support what I'm saying. I have to cite sources. Now, Rav Ovadia, being Rav Ovadia, within seconds, picked me up. I saw the light shine in his eyes, you understand? But you got to know what you're doing. This Pitchei Tshuva is right on. If this is the case, then you don't have to be hesitant, because what you're doing will be exposed to the world. Lamdonim are going to look at it. Lamdonim are going to evaluate what you're doing. Lamdonim are going to check your sources. Lamdonim are going to oversee your thought process. And halacha kabatrayi. If you can hold your own, halacha kabatrayi. And I will come to an example which we have to discuss in great depth later on. But you see, with Yontif Sheni Shel Galyut, the whole question of Eretz Yisrael, it's a frightening situation. Because here you have an example where the Shulchan Aruch paskins black and white that if you go to the Gullus, you observe one day. Klapei chutz, b'pnei ha-machloiket, whatever, you don't do malacha. But klapei pnim, you can be in America, you can use your microwave, you can take things out of the freezer, put it into the microwave, it's not gentle for you. Well, what about if you come to Eretz Yisrael? He doesn't say a word, all right? I had a lot to say about that, but it's not for now. But if you look into the Avkat Rachel, his first edition came out about 100 years after his death of his Shelet and Shuvot, he tells you that from time immemorial in Jerusalem, there was a second day Yontif observed by tourists. Well, if that's the case, how do you have so many poskim who come along and say that in Eretz Yisrael, one day? When Irvin Shapiro asked the Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, I have in my book on the Rav a picture of Irvin Shapiro bending over and asking the Rav a question at a Ritz dinner. Do you know what that question was? You can put it in like a mad comic, put in the words of what he was asking. He was saying, Rebbe, I just bought an apartment in the Plaza Hotel in Jerusalem. Do I observe one day in Israel or do I observe two? And the Rav answered him in typical Rav style, Irving, or Shapiro, whatever name he called him by Shapiro, you don't fold Kedusha into your pocket. So with that answer, the Rav was knocking down the Shulchan Aruch. The Chacham Tzvi is knocking down the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Kook is knocking down the Shulchan Aruch. The Chazon Ish is knocking down the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Shmuel Salant, what do you mean? Kedusha in New York, you have 2 days in Israel, you have one. You can't bring the Kedusha from New York to here. That's what he means, plain and simple. You cannot fold Kedusha into your pocket. Okay? And if you're an Israeli going to America, the Kedusha is there. The fact that you're an Israeli, so what? You're in America. The Kedusha is surrounding you. I don't want to go on to Lumbus now. I can explain it and quote to you the Tzemach Tzedek. I can dance with this topic. But what I want to say is, how do you have a right to overthrow the Shulchan Aruch? And this is a fabulous question. A fellow from Lawrence, a nice, frum boy, who occasionally speaks with me in learning. And he was here Sukkot time, and he was so troubled that someone told him you should observe a day and a half l'chumra, not 2 full days. And he was troubled. And I said to him, don't be troubled. But I'll explain it when I deal with in class. How can you pasken against the shulchan? That's a different shaila. But what's important for us to understand, all these svarim don't stam say you can't fold kedusha into your pocket. They explain it. They bring proofs. I spoke with the Rav on this topic for maybe 2.5 hours in 1978 on a Shabbos in Boston. You bring proofs? Oh, wait a minute. That's when halacha kabat ra'i. Okay. We have arrived. Gentlemen, somehow short people are the greatest people alive. You can have your own theory. I have my own theory that if you're short, you suffer from perhaps an inferiority complex, and you got to prove you're worthwhile. I can show it to you in the rabbinate. The man who built the most prestigious Orthodox shul in the Western world, Rabbi Joseph H. Lichtenstein, how tall was he? 5 foot, maybe 5'1". The man who built... Haskell is a little taller. Baruch Hashem, he's Josh is taller. But Josh is not in the rabbinate. He's got Haskell's grandson, it looks like. But he was my Talmud, a dear Talmud here in the Kollel. Ah, so you know. Anyway, the man who built an entire city in Israel. I don't know, as of all the Rav's Talmidim, in my opinion, no one has a bigger schut than Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. No, how tall is Steve? Tell me, answer me. No, now let's go to Gedolei Yisrael. How tall was Rabbi Aaron Cutler? No, 5'2"? That's what I'm coming to. How tall was Reb Moshe Feinstein? Reb Moshe? Oh my, Reb Moshe Feinstein. Gentlemen, I have a schut that I knew Reb Moshe. I spoke, Danny, listen here. I spoke and learning with him many times. I knew his phone number by heart, Oregon 71222. Had another phone number, Oregon 71212. He had, Reb Moshe sat in the Beis Medrash with a phone attached to his shtender. You know how the phone worked? It lit up. The Bell telephone company made him a special phone so as not to interrupt anyone else from their study. But when it lit up, he knew it's a difficult shaila, and that was Reb Moshe. Now, everything I've said until now, Reb Moshe says. And let me give you a source that if you're going to be Rabbanim, and you want to be poskim, and you want to be Gedolei Yisrael, and if you don't want to be a Gedolei Yisrael, then you should stop studying for smicha, go to medical school, go to dental school, do something else. Because let me quote to you the Alter of Slabodka: a private who doesn't want to be a general is not even a good private. And boy, the Alter never said it better. Let me tell you, Reb Nachum Zvi Finkel, the original Reb Nachum Zvi Finkel, who had a wonderful great-grandson from Chicago, but I'm quoting the original Reb Nachum Zvi Finkel. So you got to want to be a Gadol B'Yisrael. So Reb Moshe, and I've told you more than once, I'll repeat it again, we all lived in New York, and everyone gossiped about what Reb Moshe at Kapaskin, Reb Moshe at Kapaskin. When Reb Moshe came to YU, he had spent Shabbos with his daughter Shifra, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, Shifra Tendler. So Reb Moshe would spend Shabbos with the Tendlers in Washington Heights. He would daven in the yeshiva, he would speak in Shalosh Shudas. Everyone after Shabbos Sunday, what did Reb Moshe say? What did Reb Moshe do? Who was in the Tendler house? Who saw Reb Moshe's minhag? I remember one time they came back and said, Rav, they use steel wool on Shabbos. Reb Moshe allows steel wool. You know, it was always a shayla. They said, well, today I don't see a shayla, but then we were worried you absorbed water. What? When absorbed? But water? They use steel wool. So everyone, it passed word of mouth. 1958, 59, the first volume of the Igrot Moshe came out. We were literally dancing on the streets. You have no idea the joy. Reb Moshe in print. Then, of course, with the Rav, I often tell the story that already is my second or third year with the Rav. So already we knew the Rav a little better. We were frightened stiff of him, but not very frightened stiff. There already was a difference. Each year, your level of fear went down, and you... So after Shia, We asked Rebbe, we put the volume on the table, and Rebbe, your cousin, your cousin, just probably had the rabbi. He was very upset with, you know which chuva he was upset with, the liquid soap chuva, the Meisher acid using liquid soap on Shabbos. And the rabbi is very upset. The Fashtaitnis, he doesn't know what liquid soap is, what no lead is. He's very upset. Later, I saw, you know, when I started to learn a little, I saw that the Aruch HaShulchan was Matir. So I said here, I told my Talmidim many years ago, here Rav Meisher quotes the Aruch HaShulchan when it comes to a woman whose head is not covered, and you're reading Kriyat Shema, Kva Hora Otar Zakein. He quotes the Aruch HaShulchan as the post like Achron. He was Matir. You don't know, you can say Kriyat Shema, it's not Kenegeta Eva, Bizman Hazeh. But when it comes to liquid soap, he doesn't quote the Aruch HaShulchan. But I remember the Rav was thwarted by that shiva. We were happy as could be because there was so much more that we couldn't get over. Anyway, Rav Moshe's hakdama to the Igrot Moshe or Chaim is classic, and this is something you have to study and restudy. And Rav Meisher is dealing with this very, very problem. How do you have the guts to paskin? Who are you? And there's a Gemara in Sota, Daf Chaf Bet. It's a famous Gemara, Pasuk and Mishlei. Rabim Chalalecha, the Gemara says that if Talmidim, Shelo Higil Hora, Umorim, Talmidim who don't know how to learn well, but they're Morei Hora, they destroy Jews. They paskin Chilul Shabbos. They paskin Treif. They don't know what they're doing. Aye, but then you have Talmidim Shehigil Lahora, and they don't want to paskin. They're too frightened. They're too afraid. How can I take that achrayet? You all know that syndrome. Leave me alone. Ask someone else. They're also murderers, because if they don't paskin, it creates a vacuum. Who winds up paskining? People who don't know how. So you see, there's a very delicate balance here. How do you know you have the right to paskin? And Rav Moshe says exactly what I said, that Rabbi Akiva, who of us are like Rabbi Akiva? Now you have to understand, Rabbi Akiva was considered, like we look at the Chaim Brisker, that's the way earlier generations looked at Rabbi Akiva. He evidently had the most innovative mind, the most glorious, penetrating mind that any Achron had. And when you mentioned Rabbi Akiva Eger, by the way, as a kid, I never knew his name. My Rebbeim, you know, was already exposed to Rabbi Kivega at the age of 13, 14. Rabbi Kivega. Didn't know who they were talking about. Only later in life did I learn it's Rabbi Akiva Eger. But when Reb Yiddish, Schnell, you're talking quickly, Reb Kivega. And then I learned this whole story. It's a fascinating life story, just in parentheses. Those of you that are going to make movies about Gedolei Yisrael, which you should, then Rabbi Kivega is a very fascinating topic, because lo aleinu, most of his descendants were swept away by enlightenment, by the new world. He had a grandson who became a Hasidic Rebbe, and his son sat shiva for that grandson. From that grandson, we have Frum Eggers until today. There's a Rebbe, I believe, in Bnei Brak. It's a direct descendant of I think his name is Reb Leibele Eger. And the other direct descendants, who number in the tens of thousands, is from his daughter, who married Bezivik Sheni, the Chatam Sofer. The Chatam Sofer's first wife died young, and he married the daughter of Reb Akiva, and from that Zivik, we have thousands upon thousands of descendants, 90% Shomrei Torah in Mitzvot. I think my own great-granddaughter is a descendant of that. She's an Unstoffer, and I think they tie in with the Chatam Sofer directly. So it's a fascinating story, and other children became very well known in Poland, professors, royalty, and totally some, I don't even want to use the word, not even part of the Jewish people. It's a commentary on what happened to the Jew with enlightenment and coming out of the ghetto. So, and imagine sitting Shiva for that the son became a Hasidic Rebbe, and out of that son, I have taught Agers who are direct descendants of Rebbe Akiva. So Rebbe Moshe raises this very problem, and he says, Rebbe Akiva Eger himself was afraid to answer. And he said, the only reason I had to answer, because I was worried that since I know how to learn a little bit, I'm on the madrega of Misha Higila Horav Alomora, he's a murderer, and I don't want to be included in that category. But nevertheless, he told his children when they published the Shelet and Shuvat that I give all my sources so that everyone can check me out and see whether I'm correct. And Rav Moshe says, all right, Rabbi Akiva Eger could learn, he knew, but who are we? How can we emulate him? How can we dare to paskin? And Rav Moshe, of course, goes into all the sources I spoke about last week. He goes in, Ein Ladaina Lamashe Navrawat. He goes in, Yiftach Bedoro Kishmul Bedoro. He quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, how important it is to paskin, and how you have to feel the liability, the chashivut, the critical state in which you are when you paskin, how important it is. And he says, but nevertheless, and here Rav Moshe describes, if you are sincere, and you have Yirat Shemayim, and you work out all the sources, then you have a right to paskin. You may not be the brightest person in the world, but you're doing the best you can. And Yirat Shemayim, sincerity. This will explain to you why a Gentile can never be a posek. You can have Gentiles who are big mulumadim. They had in the United States and Germany, there were Gentile professors who knew Torah Shebaal Peh. You have Herb and Danby, the translation of the Mishnah. I believe it was the first translation made into the English language. It's a classic work. What? Who put it out? A Cambridge, Oxford Press. It's been reprinted so many times. Canon Danby, when he had a difficult question, he consulted with Rev Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. They were neighbors. He was a canon of a big church here, and Rev Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld was the Av Beit Din of what today is the Eidah Haredit. And he consulted with him, and he would consult with Harav Professor Siegel of Hebrew University on difficult Hebrew words. And he put out a wonderful translation of Shisha, Sidre, Mishnah, including Kodshim, including Tarot. I used it until today, you should know. I used Danby until today. I remember when I bought it, I was a high school kid. I bought it at Shalom's around the corner from the yeshiva. I was so happy. I couldn't believe it. For $5, I showed it to Rav Yosef Weiss. He said, yeah, it's Yadua. Everyone knows about it. But the Paskin, he can't Paskin, because he is lacking that Yirat Shemayim. It's not the same as someone who is committed to the halachic system. He cannot paskin. He's no different than you take the conservative rabbinate, what went on in rabbinical assembly, the pressures of life wash away halacha. The tragedy of an aguna washes away halacha. That's not an approach. You have to have Yirat Shemayim. It's halach, it's Devar Hashem. It binds, it obligates. So a goy cannot be a posek. He can be learned. He can be knowledgeable, of course. Oh, but Chabad Messianic, I'll tell you. I've yet to see many Chabadnikim who gedoli Yisrael in learning. So I don't know whether there are some Chabad. But if it should happen, I'd be very hesitant, because he's lacking in a certain understanding of what Yiddishkeit is about. Not only that, I've spoken to Chabad Messianikim. They're like a cult. They're like brainwashed. They can't talk straight. They wear the yarmulke. They wear the pin. I mean, I wish Mashiach were here too. But the colors of Mashiach, the Sefer Torah of Mashiach, they tell you things. It frightens me. So I don't know. If it's Stama Chabadnik who says the Rebbe could have been Mashiach, I sign on the dotted line, the Rebbe could have been Mashiach. Of course the Rebbe could have a lot of Divrei Torah in it to prove he's right. Not a problem whatsoever. But if he tells me the Rebbe is alive and he's going to, or if he tells me, as I talk about, I don't know if I write it in Washington, but if he tells me he's going to sleep at the Rebbe's grave, as that fellow told me, the Friday night Shabbos he's spending in Springfield Avenue, right near the cemetery. So if the Rebbe wakes up, he'll be there. So I'm a little bit frightened to depend upon his common sense that's necessary in halachic sense. So I'm a little bit frightened. But Reb Meisher says, Tahakdama to Igrot Moshe Orachayim, to the very first volume that came out. And Reb Meisher is so powerful. And he shows us something else here. And I never forgot this. When I learned this, it had left a big impression upon me. Look, we all know, you're learning Yoredeya. We all know that Of B'Chalav is the Rabbanan. Okay? So I always tell the story, which is not a true story, it's the only story I ever tell that's not true, that I went on in 1970, it's my second year teaching at BMT. BMT is 2 years old, and now we began with 10 students. By 1970, we might have had 40 students already. And I feel tired. So I go to see a doctor. My doctor sends me to Hadassah, and an outpatient in internal medicine, a doctor whose name I don't even know, saved my life. And he said to me, "Where were you raised?" I said, "I was raised in New York." He says, "You were raised at sea level. Jerusalem is on mountains. The only way you're going to succeed is you take a nap in the middle of the day. You don't have as much oxygen as you have in New York." And with that, he saved my life. From 1970 until today, and today included, Advad Baklal, I always take a nap in the middle of the day. Of course, I wake up very early, so it balances out. If I wind up with 7-8 hours sleep altogether, I'm doing very well. In addition, he told me, get a change of scenery. So the boys are going down to a lot for Hanukkah. And you got to remember, in those days, there was no money. It was a primitive country. The BMT was part of the Jewish agency. We go down to a lot, we camp out on the beach. We set up tents, and we're on the beach camping out, and we do our own cooking. So imagine the boys bring chicken in sour cream. And you say to them, "What's with you guys? How can you bring chicken and sour cream? It's rabbinically forbidden." They say, "Rebbe, we paskin like Rabbi Yossi Haglili." Now, the truth is, if you lived in Tiberias at the time of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, you could eat chicken and sour cream. He was the posek there. He was the batra'i. That's the way he paskened. The same thing with the city, the Gemara and Shabbos, Daf Kuflamet Aleph, the big sukya. What about Hechshir Emila? You all know the problem. Can you... A mohel in Philadelphia, I wish the story wasn't true, he should rest in peace. A mohel in Philadelphia, I go into the rabbinate, my first experience, 1961, and I'm invited to a Brit Mila. I was in Lower Merion. If you know the area, Winfield was still Jewish, right across City Line, maybe a 20-minute walk, if that much. I'm invited to a Brit, and the mohel drives up on Shabbos. So I say to the mohel, very stupidly or naively or innocently, "How can you drive Shabbos?" And he says to me, "What, you're an Amoritz? I paskin like Rebbe Eliezer." And Hechshir Emila, if the mohel doesn't come, it's like if you have to clean the knife you're going to do the brit with, you have to boil the water. They didn't have alcohol then, they boiled water. What if you didn't boil the water before Shabbos? So you boil the water on Shabbos, according to Rebbe Eliezer. We don't paskin that way. We paskin that only the etzim, mila, and priya is permissible on Shabbos. But all the hechshirei mila have to be done before. And the mall has to be in place. He can't just start traveling on Shabbos. And in Reb Eliezer's city, every city around was destroyed by the Romans, not his city. And even though they were Mechallel Shabbos, they boiled water on Shabbos. The Mohelim drove down on their camels on Shabbos. They did every Yisr imaginable to get ready for the Brit. But he was the posek there. And halacha, kabatrayi. So Reb Moshe says, you see, we have to do the best we can. Even if in the course of future generations, they may not accept what you paskin. But if you do it, you do it. Biyirat Shemayim. You do it to the best of your abilities. Yiftach b'dorok u'shmul b'dorok. This is a valid psak. And it's a meritic thought from Reb Moshe. That even if ultimately our psak will not be accepted, even if ultimately Akronim who will come after us will prove us wrong, even if ultimately they won't agree with our thinking, but you were honest, you're a Yirei Shemayim, you checked the sources, you did what you could. That's Reb Moshe. Wow. Halacha kabat ra'i. Now the story with the chicken and milk, I always ended it off that the boys told me, Rebbe, don't get upset, it's coconut milk, it's soya cream, we just wanted to test you and see if the Rebbe is really from. And considering all the stories going around today and how he began the shiur, they were right in place testing the Rebbe to see if he's really from. And then Reb Moshe, of course, says something else, echoing the Pitkei Tshuva. This is why, you see, when you paskin and you tell someone, this psak is only for you, don't publicize what I'm telling you. That's not a posek. All right, that's a Rebbe. You need an injection on the spot. You follow me, David? You need a vitamin on the spot. So you get it. The Rebbe gives it to you. But Chesky, that's not a posek. A posek is someone who writes a tshuva, who explains himself, who is going to allow the tshuva to circulate. People are going to see it, Yehuda. People are going to evaluate it. That's a posek. And Reb Moshe says, I am publishing with all my reasons. Let it circulate. Let Talmidei Chachamim see what I've written. And if I make sense, halacha kabatra'i. If I don't make sense, they'll paskin against me, and Klal Yisrael will ultimately decide. But this is Reb Moshe. Then I go one step further. I don't know who, what, or recently someone wrote to me. Oh, I know who already. Okay, a Talmud of mine. So if you recall, I mentioned in class, I don't know if it was the Sunday class, the Monday class. I've mentioned it many times people who can always criticize a Rebbe, he repeats his stories, but you don't realize, yeah, he repeats his stories because it's different students, it's a different generation. He repeats the stories. I heard the Rebbe in the 50s, and I hear tapes of him in the 60s, the 70s, and you hear he's repeating, but it's different students, it's very important. So I told you that Reb Chaim killed the ability to paskin. Once you have a dialectical approach, go this way, that way. And Reb Simcha Zelek had to paskin because Reb Simcha Zelek was a product of the Lashon before the Torah was invented by Reb Chaim, as the Rebbe used to say. Called them, as the Rebbe's grandfather, Reb Elia Prishim, used to say, I was born before Matan Torah, before Reb Chaim. Okay. So I mentioned that in Slabodka, it got so bad that after World War I, they established a kollel for psak. And that's where Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky learned. And ultimately, anyone who learned that kollel became a first-rate posek. Fine. So someone said to me, quoting what I said, and instead of Reb Yaakov, he puts in Reb Moshe Feinstein. So I want to tell you, here we have to be thankful that Reb Moshe Feinstein never learned in a yeshiva. What do I mean by that? The Lithuanian Reb Chaim way of thinking did not corrupt him. Rav Moshe learned with his father, and then he learned with Rav Pesach Pruskin, who was the Rav of Shikalov, and Rav Moshe had shimush with first-rate poskim. And Rav Moshe at an early age showed this ability to poskim. And he says here, my father said about me, Shemekaveh, Ukimaat Shehu Batuach, Sheyirbu HaShoalim Mimeni Devach Hashem Zu Halacha Ba'alpeh Ubiktav, Ubiezrat Hashem Ashivka Halacha. That my father said, he's almost positive, I'm going to be a first-rate posek. And Rav Moshe says, Ani Modela Kaddish Baruch Hu, that I'm fulfilled my father's fondest wishes about me. And he ends off with a prayer, V'chein yazreini kol yamai lahavin divrei rabotenu lamitam ulahorot kahalacha b'lishun ta'utu mikshol v'gam lezari lezere zari l'chol tamidai b'toch kolom dei ha-Torah li olam. And final paragraph, he apologizes for putting it into print, but you all understand, by putting it into print, everyone can see his thought process and they can agree or disagree with him accordingly. Okay, now, what do we mean? Halacha kebatra'i? Still bothers the later Rishonim, the Achronim. How can you say halacha kebatra'i? And all the Rishonim say that this begins from the time of Abaye and Rava. Now, why Abaye and Rava? What happened then? Why is the end of that period with the mis of Abaye and Rava? Why is there such a drastic change? And we say halacha kabatra'i from Abaye v'Rava on. And no one gives a clear-cut answer. I can only propose an answer. I may be right, I may be wrong, but what I'm about to say makes a lot of sense. We all remember the story with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky and Yeruchim Meshel on the El Al plane to New York. There's no question that we view subsequent generations as smaller than previous generations. We're not what our grandparents were. We're not what our rabbeim were. This is part of being a Jew. We're moving further away from Matan Torah, further away from the Mesorah. Forget more. Learn less. Whatever the realities of life are. When was there a drastic change in our religious life? This change is tremendously pronounced. We don't even recognize it today. We take it for granted. We are no longer Mekadesh HaChodesh Al Pi Riyah. When a formal calendar was introduced, it represented a major rung going downwards. The arrow points downwards. We're no longer on that level to be Mekadesh Chadashim, to understand the new moon, to understand the calendar, to know if the Edom are telling the truth. A heart of Torah Shebaal Peh becomes theoretical. no longer practical. All right. Could be it had to be. We go into Gullus. We're exiled. We're dispersed. The generation can no longer handle Kiddush HaChodesh Al Pi HaRe'iyah. And I don't have to tell you that affects all our way of life. When did that happen? And you see here, we don't have a black and white answer. Those of you that will go into scientific Jewish scholarship, you will find that there are many different theories on when it happened. But the most plausible period seems to be the period of Abaya and Rafa. They represent the transition from the golden era of Torah Shebaal Peh to the secondary era. It's not yet a cliché in America, with all due respect to Rabbi Rubin, who doesn't accept my designation, but it represents going downhill. And that's why, until the period of Abaye and Rava, we don't argue on an open Mishnah. It is very hard to argue on the early Amorayim. When you go past Abaye and Rava, all right, the Gaonim already take sides. The Rishonim take sides. Halacha kabatra'i. We no longer have Kiddush HaChodesh. We are all in the same boat. Now, others may try to tie it to Bitul HaSmicha. It could very well be that Bitul HaSmicha, the original Smicha, the Ishmi Pi Ishmi Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Bitul of Kiddush HaChodesh, they are two sides of the same coin. But Abaye and Rava, that's the catchword. That's the nomenclature. That says, until here, it was a massive, intense level of Torah Shebaal Peh. With Abaye and Rava, things start going down. And this may be an interesting observation. Now, let me come back to the Ramah that I quoted to you, and let me show you that Ramah is really right in a rush, and the rush says it very beautifully. It's the rush to the fourth Perek in Sanhedrin in the standard edition of Shas, the Vilna edition. It's Daf Kuf Yud Chet Omid Aleph on column B of that page, subdivision 6, right in the middle. And here's the rush. And when it comes to Pesach, Yiftach B'Doro K'Shmuel B'Doro. You only have the Shofet that's alive at your time. And you can argue. You can even argue with the Gaonim. And why? Vadarabba anu tovsim divrei ha'achronim ikar. Kiven sheyadu svarat ha'rishonim v'sifratam v'hichriu b'inelo ha'svarat v'amdu al ikaro shel dava. And what the Rush is saying, you know the way they think. You have to know why they reached that conclusion. You have to know what is guiding them. You have to know what their svara is, what their thinking is, what their intellect is, what their traditions were. And when you know it, you have the right to think it out and reach your own conclusion. And he alludes here, and again, I can spend a lot of time on it, but it's not germane right now, but you should be familiar with it, that Chazal had a negative attitude to people who paskined simply from a Mishnah. And you had to know the Svara. You had to know what's behind it. You had to have deep understanding. And then you could paskin. And that's exactly the Ramah. And you see, there's a hidden dog here. Avu is the Hund Bagrabin. Think of what the Rush is saying. A Fol HaKelev Kavur. What would you say in English? What approximates? In Yiddish, men say, Avu is the Hund Bagrabin. In Hebrew, it translates, a Fol HaKelev Kavur. Is there something similar in English? I don't think so. I never heard an expression like that in English. Where is the elephant in the room? You know that expression? Gentlemen, I read the Ramah. I just did the Rush. What about if a new manuscript comes along? All this is depended upon. All this is conditioned if you have all the manuscripts, if you have all the sources, if you know everything that was said before you. What do you do if suddenly they discover in the Vatican a slew of manuscripts of the Meiri that no one has seen since the Vatican confiscated those manuscripts so many hundreds and hundreds of years ago? Follow? We're going to come to that. That's a major. I'm going to show you something that only, it's only in these notes, as you will see. Hold on. I'm just throwing that out.
No, but the question is this. You say you have to go in animals.
Right.
If you have a zero, but you're not allowed to take a shower or a bath.
Yeah, you asked that question already, but it can bother you from today to tomorrow. But in order to knock out a gezeira, you have to be a beit and yota gadol b'chokhma v'minyan.
But that, the reason was that the men who did all the beit mechatz, they were machal Shabbos by putting on the fire on Shabbos to warm the water.
Okay.
You don't have that today.
And I want to ask you a question. And when you bring water in from your central system, don't you cook up the water that follows it? And even with the with what do you call it, with Dud Shemesh, you have there already, it's the Sugyan with Chamei Teveri, it's a little different. But once again, with a Dud Shemesh, there's a big problem. You bring in new water, you boil it on Shabbos, the sun. During the summer, I get out of the Dud Shemesh. I mean, for most of the year, I get unbelievable boiling water out of my Dud Shemesh. Because I'm on the, you know, I'm the top floor. So it means it falls down immediately. It doesn't have to fall down five stories and take 5 minutes to warm up. Within 2 seconds, I can't go into the shower. I have to turn on cold water with it. So Shabbos, all right. So you should know, even those that are, I personally am Mekil all the time. I mean, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Shmuel Shabbos, but anyway, there are Machmirim, but even according to the Machmirim, it could very well be Friday night you can use the Shemesh. Shabbos, you can't. You follow from their point of view. Because by Friday night, all right, the water comes in. It's not going to be heated up. You're only at the most the grumma 12 hours later. But this is the Shaila. So it's not so simple. With medicine, you have a better case. Because you say, who chops up pills today? So you make a better case. Yeah, but it's a gezeira. But I told you, halach l'maisa, I spoke with Rebbe about it. And the Rebbe said to me, never yet had a Shaila with medicine on Shabbos where he didn't paskin they could take it. Because if someone asks already, all you have to ask them, can you function? Do you have to sit down? Can you lie? He says, no, I can't get out of my seat. I have a headache. Right? No fill the mishkaf. What does no fill the mishkaf mean? You follow? Angels ring azeira b'makum tsa. Okay? So, all right, you have where to turn. But this is our halachic system. Because if we say any Tom, Dick, and Harry can come along and knock out a halacha, we're going to be in trouble. You understand? Look what's going on today. With the innovations. You don't realize what happened in America 15 years later, it reaches Israel. Do you know that two Orthodox rabbis came out last week here in Israel, let there be at the Kotel a Reform service, a Conservative service, an Orthodox service, different hours. No, I don't speak that language. I have to tell you, I can't even relate to these people anymore. I've seen already their tendencies. So you're going to let them take care of halacha? I shiver and shake what's going to be left by the time they're done. Yes?
I think the Moshe says that a shower fan is not including a zero pizza.
Okay, if you find the source, so you mean Rav Moshe would matter a shower because it's not the entire body covered all at once. Interesting, if you find, it could be. So Ken's on your hearsay, you say it's not in print?
No, it's in print.
So find it, show it to me in print. It's not in the first five volumes as far as I can answer you. But if you find it, show it to me. Okay, I just want to show you one more fabulous source. Anyway, that question I'm throwing out is going to preoccupy us next week and the week afterwards, because that's a fabulous question. And there already you get involved in Chochmat Yisrael and manuscripts and what did the Rav have to say about it, and how do we relate to it? That's a serious question. But coming back to Halacha Kabatra'i, I'll give you an unbelievable source. This is a Rishon. Sefer Shibolei Haleket HaShalem. Right? Familiar with it? You've heard the Sefer. Rabbeinu Tzidkiyahu HaRofe. Now this, right away, HaRofe, if you know what's going on in Israel with the election campaign, and Rav Chaim Amsalem interviewed on all the papers this weekend against Shas, and of course, here again, you have a proof that Gedolei Yisrael all made a living from an honorable occupation, either medical doctors or the napcha or sandla. There were endless occupations for Gedolei Yisrael, and here you have a proof because it's part of his name. Everyone quotes the Shibolei Haleket by Rabbeinu Tzidkiyahu HaRofe. Now, Shibolei Haleket was an esoteric sefer, and Shlomo Buber, Rav Shlomo Buber, it's his edited edition that we all use. Who was Rav Shlomo Buber? The father of Martin Buber. But the difference between the father and son is very simple. The father was a Hasidish Yid who remained a Hasidish Yid, who was a big Talmud Chacham and totally at home in Chochmat Yisrael and worked very hard in edited editions. And I can tell you a story that says it all. 1972 or 73 in Mechala, I come out of the library and there's a girl standing outside the library literally in tears. So I asked the girl, what's the matter? I asked this young married woman, what's the matter? So she tells me she has a source. Her teacher, her Rebbe, told her to check it out. And she can't find it. And it's a Tanchuma. So I say to her, go back in the library, show me the Tanchuma you're using. I saw it was a regular Tanchuma. I said, ask them for a Tanchuma Buber, the Buber edition. And a day or two later, she meets me all smiles and thanks me immensely. And sure, the source was in the Buber Tanchuma. And of course, this is the problem when you don't have an edited edition, the version that reaches us may not be the original. When you go in and edit from ancient manuscripts, we basically come out with a proper, valid edition. In the Hakdama, he raises the exact problem we have raised. He raises the exact problem that Rav Moshe Feinstein raises. And he says, Kasher ha'itni ani chatzair hadal. I'm a young man who knows next to nothing. I'm very busy with life and profession. Who gives me the right to get involved with halacha, to quote sources, to paskin? Who gives me the right to deal with tshuvat hagaonim, with minhagei Yisrael? How do I have the right to publish this volume? Shibolei Haleket, and he says, he uses the word Shibolei Haleket, it's a play on words that he gathered together like leket. What is leket? The sheaves that are left in the field, so the poor people go up and down and gather together. It's like a big catering establishment and they just finished serving 400 people and poor people now come in and you have bread on the table and you have a salad on the table and you have leftover meat and you're gathering together. He says, I've called it Shibolei HaLeked and I've gathered it together. And he says, who gives me the right? And he quotes the Gemara in Chulin Dafav Amid Bet, where the Gemara talks about how the Nechosh HaNechoshet that existed among Israel and so many righteous Jews led the Jewish people, and only so much later was the Nechosh broken and destroyed, and all these righteous kings didn't do it? Why not? And he says, because in every generation, the Ribbono Shel Olam left something for the generation to do. Makom hinichu lo abatav lehitgader ba. And you all know this is a famous quote from the Gemara in Chulin. It appears afterwards as well. And we have a right. The Torah Shabbat plan never ends. And as small as we are, as little as we are, we can be machadesh. We can add. And then he quotes, he says, a philosopher from a Gentile philosopher. Maybe he learned this in medical school. He said, I heard this question from Chachmei HaGoyim, that the philosophers asked the one among them they considered tops, what gives us the right to argue with early generations? What gives us the right to add to what they said? What gives us the right to claim that we have more insight? And this philosopher answered, tell me, who sees further? Who has more broad vision? A midget or a giant? And of course, everyone answered, the giant has broader vision. But what do you do if you put the midget on the giant's shoulders? Then who sees further? The midget on the giant's shoulders. And he says, I am a midget, but I stand on the shoulders of all the giants who came before me. And that's why I have the right to paskin. Well, you got to say, that is a good vart. And remember, it comes from Gentile philosophers. He gives full credit. He may have picked it up in medical school. And that, of course, takes us back to the whole question of Torah Mada and the Rambam and Kiddush HaChodesh and taking truth from wherever it comes. And Rabban Soloveitchik's famous two talks on Torah and Mada justifying the outlook, the program, the configuration of Yeshiva University, which were given in the 1980s. So it is quite a source, the Shibolei HaLeket. And gentlemen, we may be midgets, but we are midgets standing on the shoulders of giants. And like Reb Yisrael Salantis said, what gives us the right to teach, to be machaneich, aleh to paskin? We saw giants in our youth. That gives us the right. We are midgets standing on the shoulders of giants. So let me reiterate before we come to the freebies. What did we do today? All right, we did a great deal. Halacha kabat ra'i. Why is halacha kabat ra'i? We have to explain. We have to give our sources. We have to give an analysis. As Reb Moshe says, we have to let it circulate. People have to see. People can agree, people can disagree, and that is the heart of the Rush. It is the heart of the Rama. We are analyzing all that came before us, and as Reb Moshe quotes with Reb Eliezer, with Reb Yossi HaGlili, in Tiberias you can eat chicken and milk at that time. In the city of Reb Eliezer, the Mohel could drive to the Brit on Shabbat. And no one said it better than the Shibole HaLeket. A midget standing on the shoulder of giants can see infinitely further than the giant himself. And we've left one tremendous question that will tantalize us. What if a new manuscript comes along? Okay, yeah, Yitzchak.
Could there be a danger in the Babylon computer disk in that we all of a sudden discover a posek in the 1700s, 1800s, who said what he said, but nobody follows it. But all of a sudden I say to myself, well, I like his opinion, I want to go with it.
Okay.
That's like Priya. Quotes.
No. So what you're saying is asking a different question. Can you suddenly pull out a Dat Yachid and say, I'm following? We will deal with that quite extensively down the line. It's a legitimate question. The Shach asked the very question. Well, we have to deal with it. Baruch Hashem, if you're an Einikel, that's why you asked it. Okay, now tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up in Chicago, pick up with the Ridbaz, and I will even deal with that anecdote with the Chilul Shabbos and give you my opinion. And I don't know if we'll reach it tomorrow, but we are sailing into Yeshivat Eitz Chaim, and we will pay a visit to East Broadway and be in the classroom in 1888, 1889, Be'ezrat Hanotein Layov Koach. A world is in front of us. May the Ribbono Shel Olam give us health and strength. Yitzchak, this is yours. 1 second. I sent you a fax. Did you get it? If not, that's the sheet addressed to you. Gentlemen, if anyone has the book Be'emunato on Rav Amital, this is chapter 22. That is not in the original Hebrew printing. If anyone wants it, it's yours. I made another copy of it. If you recall, I spoke in YU a few weeks ago about the big machloket between Rav Aaron Cutler and the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe on Shosh and Nagach et Apara. Here is an article of research with variations of what the machloket is about. I still stand on what I said. There's no correction here, but it's fascinating to see how it's become a major topic. This is memoir literature about Mir Yeshiva by the gentleman, Rabbi Dr. Theodore Lewis, Zichrono Levracha, who went on to become the rabbi of the Newport Synagogue. This is very fascinating. It's from a Talmud of mine in West Hempstead. He says, this is the real rabbinate. In Omaha, Nebraska, the mikveh dried up due to the lack of rain. How are you machsher a mikveh when you have no rain? And the nearest rain will be months away. They were machsher the mikveh with tremendous blocks of ice. And it's very fascinating. They contacted YU. The Talmud here learned in Griscolel. Contacted Rav Heschel Schechter, Rav Savalovsky. They sent them to an expert in Mikvot, and they were able to work it out. This is the story. Once again, if anyone's wife is interested, Nashim magazine of Makor Rishon. I can't get over how they can have a glossy magazine, hip, right into modernity, and yet with modesty and Yad Shemayim. Finally, the booklet in memory of my mother. If anyone wants a copy, Meimad HaIsha Al Pi HaYadur. It's about men and women, husband and wife, and it's quite powerful with a little biography of my mother in back. Until we meet again in health and happiness tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Das Vedanya. Okay, Yitzchak.